Thank you, Kathy, and thank you to the organizers for the opportunity to talk about this. I'm going to be kind of following on what Emily just went through and talk a little bit more about how we're using these tools in Denver. The background is obesity is well known. It's associated with major morbidity and mortality, high health care costs. Many conditions are associated with it. It's got some opportunities here in terms of interventions, both clinically and on a community basis, in terms of policy and system environmental changes, similar to what Mary Bassett said this morning. You can show something at a local level, you get someone's attention. So that's what we're hoping to use these tools to do, as Emily described. Trying to get those tailored to communities and individuals based on these prevalence estimates. And in general, the public health monitoring system should efficiently track this and not be an undue burden on a public health department. Very common and highly prevalent, about a third of Americans are obese. That's 80 million Americans. There's higher rates in non-Hispanic blacks and Hispanics in these national surveys from the CDC, from the BRFSS. But also, we can do that at the state level, as I'm sure you all do, and we can see the rates in Colorado, considered maybe a less obese state. We have obesity running at about 20%. You can see the different rates and the relatively small confidence interval at the bottom there between 20.4 to 22.2% with obesity. These are samples with close to 12,000, 13,000 sampled individuals in Colorado in any one year. And if you look at it by race, you can see some differences, but you now begin to see this confidence interval gets a little wider, especially among the blacks here. We have a low population, or relatively lower population of blacks, higher rates of Hispanics in Colorado. You see the confidence interval is getting a little wider. But if I wanted to do that in Denver compared to Colorado, the confidence intervals are more broad. We only have maybe 1,000 BRFSS performed in Denver in any one year, so it's a pretty small sampling here. Just to give you a flavor for, we're trying to get down to that local level, but Denver's not enough for us. We need to go deeper than that. So, here's an example of part of the problem with using these BRFSS data is that, so we know that the population in general is about 50-50 men and women. But the number of people that are surveyed from the BRFSS, like here it's in the first group, 54% were female and blacks, and 46% were male. But the confidence interval for that number, just the number of men or women, is broad, pretty broad, even though we know this population is about 50-50. So we're getting down to some cell sizes that are getting relatively small. If I do that by age, I want to do that by age, I get this warning that you get below 50 and you're in trouble. You shouldn't be really basing estimates on less than 50 in a cell, and you can see that many of the cells here are below 50. So we're looking for a different technique to do this estimation of BMI across the city and county of Denver. So just to remind you about the public, there was a question about the public health monitoring system, and really, we wanted to measure the overweight and obese rates across groups and represent them geographically, and with that geographic analysis, apply some socioeconomic measures. I'm not going to show you those here today. We've done that. Begin to show you that some of the qualities that we're looking for: ease of access to longitudinal data, its completeness, timeliness, and representativeness. So, in the methods here, we're really looking to figure out the number of individuals using these healthcare facilities is the denominator, as Emily described. We normalize the data. This method that we use, this PopMed method that is Emily alluded to, creates this virtual data warehouse. So we standardize the data from all these different EMRs across Denver or the Denver metro area. And as Emily said, this is a method that's been used for decades by the HMO Research Network, funded by a lot of different agencies over those several decades. But more recently, the FDA has invested largely in this product, this PopMedNed product, and they now do surveillance, post-marketing surveillance, on about 130 million Americans for adverse drug events or adverse device events. And this has also been adopted by PCORI, the Patient-Centered Outcome Research Institute, to run a network of over 100 million Americans studying patient-reported outcomes. So the feds have invested nearly $200 million in this technology to do surveillance in a public or research sense. The numerator that we're looking for is the number of adults with overweight or obese, and it leverages the height and weight that's been collected because of meaningful use incentive payments. And it also goes through a process of improving the data through quality assurance and removing biologically implausible values as stipulated by some programs that the CDC puts out. I mentioned PopMedNet, PMN, is a federated query service, as I mentioned, used by the FDA and PCORI, but we needed to create our own instance of that, and that's housed at the University of Colorado, and it works with this virtual data warehouse. So this is a transparent distributed data network. It's based on these federal models. Participation is entirely voluntary. We don't have a rule that says you must report BMI to local or state health department. But we've established, as Emily described, this level of trust where they say, okay, we know what you're going to do with this. We set up a data use agreement, and they agree. Their lawyers sign off on it. It's currently now all de-identified. We use just the minimum amount of data to produce the output we're looking for. And it has, as I mentioned earlier, a common data model. We focus a lot on data quality assessment. This is not a simple task. Things can go wrong anywhere along the way, and use this as a federated tool. So I think Emily went through this. I'm not going to go through these. Just to give you an idea, this is a network that's mostly focused on the area around Denver, which is this little area here. Most of these are in the Denver metro area, but this is a graphic to show we've got many different groups contributing. I'm not going to go through this. She's also described this method before and this, but I will go to now to some summary. So this is the adult BMI registry summary that we've been able to produce, and you can see the line for Denver is the Denver population of adults is about 475,000, and just try to stay with that arrow there, and we had a valid BMI for 158,000, which gave us about a third of the population. Now, admittedly, we have duplicates in there, but about a third of the population is represented. That's for 158,000 over this 4 or 5 year period, compared to over that 4 or 5 year period, I'd have 5,000 BRFSS. So it allows us to create some estimates of coverage first, and then to make an estimate of obesity, this 30%. Now, if I look at the BRFSS, self-reported BRFSS, it's 20%, and that's not surprising, because I'm sure most of us in this room would probably underestimate our BMI. But you can see the difference, and this is now stacking up all the counties that are participating in this project, or that will be participating in this project. And you can see that the difference is for a county like Boulder, where they are generally more healthy and younger, they don't have as much trouble estimating their BMI or their height and weight compared to Adams County, which is much more impoverished than Boulder County. Here now is breaking it out by race and ethnicity, and you can see some obvious things here. You know, let's see if I can get the arrow back. So here, the percent obese among blacks, of course, as we saw in the national numbers, much, much higher. And Asian Pacific Islanders, I can make an estimate there, but I couldn't even get an estimate with BRFSS. Same thing with American Indians, where the rate of obesity is way worse from these measures, from EHRs, than we would have from those Denver estimates just based on BRFSS. And I can do similarly down at the bottom looking at age groups, and you can see this progression of higher obesity as we would expect, but much lower than we would see on the BRFSS with progression over time in age. So just to kind of summarize a little bit the results here, this assessment of registry coverage is important because, you know, we can't really make an estimate when we have a very low penetration into the certain areas of town. We spent a lot of time on quality assurance. We spent a fair amount of effort aggregating the data from the U.S. Census and the recent American Community Survey to figure out what are the most recent estimates, as Emily described. We've seen this explosion. I've been working in Denver for more than three decades, and I haven't seen that sort of growth in our population in that time, but in the last half a decade, it's been a 10% growth. And as we see here, 30% of adults and 50% of children are represented, and about 95% of all the records that we had were able to be geocoded, which allows us to get to our key point, is how do we represent this in a way that someone doesn't have to look at those numbers I showed you, but look at something a little more pleasing and palatable and something they want to engage around. So here's that. This is our adult obesity prevalence registry, which describes, you can see these low rates in some areas of town, but on the west side of town and on the north side of town, we have much higher rates. And of course, these are related to areas of greater poverty. You know, the west and north sides, this kind of inverted L of Denver, is where the most impoverished people live. The people with lowest education are typically housed in these areas. But you can see at the bottom that there are some areas that have insufficient data, where there's less than 50 adults with a valid BMI or less than 10% of the population is adequately represented. And so those are some areas that we just don't even bother expressing anything. You can see these shaded areas as I have an arrow pointing there now. There are indeed some limitations to this approach. There's some selection biases. Obese people, as I started out, have more comorbid conditions, so they wind up going to the doctor more. If you're a healthy young person, you're not likely to, even though you may have coverage, you may not go to the doctor. So there's a problem there, especially, as Emily pointed out, we started out with about 19% uninsured. We're now down to about 9% uninsured. So we've made some progress. We may get these numbers actually may go down as we get some of the younger group that's now insured being included in these analyses. So that's something we'd like to look at. And then the end result of that is higher rates of obesity prevalence. So in discussing this, I think that EHR BMI data are much more comprehensive than BRFSS. We just had way more to study. Compared with the BRFSS, the EHR data showed higher obesity rates in general and by gender and race. The objective BMI measures are presumably more accurate than self-assessment. So that might be, you know, not a limitation but an improvement, that we actually had something objective in these measurements from the EHR. BRFSS may underestimate obesity prevalence, has very limited small area analysis capacity. The best we could do is, you know, I showed you a map where I showed you all the neighborhoods, the census tracts. That would have been just one color for Denver. We couldn't have done anything more than that in the mapping. And these rate discrepancies among complementary data sources should be resolved. The title says I have an answer. I don't have an answer. I just have a problem that now I have two sources of data with different sort of results. Federated query is possible, and it's possible to do monitoring of population level health indicators. As Emily pointed out in the slide I skipped over, we're doing that for cardiovascular disease risk. We're doing that for tobacco. We've done that for mental health as well. And not everything runs in line with poverty. Mental health actually is turning out that it's not necessarily in line with poverty when you start looking for depression. Certainly, suicide is not in line with poverty. You know, it's much higher in white males than it is in any other group in Denver. So there's some reasons to start looking at this at this geographic level to see if we can find certain diseases that are associated with poverty and others that may not. And the self-reported data may typically underestimate the percent of the population with overweight or obese. So this is this idea. We call this penetration. It's a coverage area, and Denver sits, right there in the center there. And you can see the rate of coverage in Denver is much higher than the surrounding counties. We're a very small county compared to the rest of the Denver metro area, and we don't have a lot of penetration to many others. So we're trying to grow information in those other counties. So our next steps are, well, first of all, we've been taking these maps to the community to ask what they think. What does it make them want to do? Does it make them want to throw tomatoes that you're calling my neighborhood fat? Or does it make them want to go to their politician to say, what are you doing about this? So this is about some community engagement to figure out what's the message, how do we convey that message to them, how can we improve the message to them, and then have them use that in their advocacy. Work on this discrepancies between the different data sources. I consider them complementary at this point, not necessarily competing. We, as Emily said, we need a method to unduplicate the individuals, and hopefully we'll do that through our health information exchange that has an MPI that needs to be accurate, because if you get it wrong, you're going to kill somebody. So they want to get it right. They spend a lot of time investing in making sure that as they send clinical data for a patient, it's the right patient's data to the right individual. As I showed you the map of coverage, and with our partners, the other four county jurisdictional health departments, we're trying to expand, and we're getting them involved in signing the data use agreement and have them seeing their own data. And then also to get more of the partners in their jurisdictions to sign up voluntarily to share their data with their jurisdiction's health department. So I think that's my last. So acknowledgments to all the other folks who worked on this. And I think that's my last question. Time for questions and discussion.
I think this is a great idea to expand the nominators. You can get no response and all objective BMI from the medical record. When you compare the virtual obesity registry data with the BRMS, have you considered BRMS is based on the whole population data? The medical record, the population, target population base is the people visit the facilities. Maybe there are people in good shape, never or rarely visit the hospital. That causes the differences because the people visit hospital will have higher obesity rate than general population.
It's an excellent point, and I acknowledge that this is not perfect. I think the hope is, you know, I look to New York City, where they are doing this same sort of thing, and they're also running NHANES in their city. So they'll be able to compare the results of a population-based NHANES approach to this EHR. That's part of their macroscope effort in New York City, which is hopefully going to help us answer that question, by how much should you adjust it, if you should, right? And I assume that you need to adjust it by something, but I don't know what that number is yet. Right. Yeah. Because you're absolutely right. The, you know, population-based estimates are different than those who seek care. Right. Yes.
Hi. I thank you. That's a very delicate piece of work. It was very interesting. I have a question about data quality assurance, which, you know, you guys mentioned a couple of times. You're not actually holding these records, right? You have no control over the quality.
Right. So, you know, in Massachusetts as well, they have MDPHNet. pleased to use a similar technique to them, and I look forward to learning more about that in Massachusetts. What happens is that we have spent effort building quality assurance programs that each site runs on their own data to allow them to say, okay, what percent of the people in this registry have a valid BMI? What percent of all the people who are in care at a facility have anything in this registry? So there's the variety of quality assurance programs, again, leveraging the knowledge and experience of that HMO research network of decades that Kaiser participated in, to say, how do you approach the quality assurance efforts across the distributed network? We don't hold the records. They all sit behind their own firewalls. But that's a gradual today, we're having an email conversation about how come these numbers aren't working out the way we expected them. It's not once and done, like Lauren said. This is an ongoing process, and setting up quality assurance programs on a routine basis is part of setting up one of these networks. Yeah. Sorry. Yes.
Hey, I'm Brenda Newsham. The NASCO project, which you just gave a lovely shout out to. Yeah. We're actually tomorrow going to have a panel on the NASCO, so if you want some of those results, you can come on over. But one thing I was just going to say, I'm just nerdily thrilled by this work. Very excited, and it's so far along, and very, very exciting and awesome. But one of the other ways that we can potentially think about banding what is a reasonable distance from Burpitt, given that they are different constructs, is potentially, I wonder if we might be able to use just a national Burpitt number for BMI for obese and a national Haynes number for obese from the same time period, and see what's a reasonable distance. And that probably actually varies by subgroup. So we know we've looked at some things in New York City, actually among PEDS with different data sets, and African American girls have really different patterns of self-report than some of the other groups. So that might be one way to sort of set bands of reasonableness
sure.
for what we expect. And just the other kind of anecdotal piece is, I also wonder, do you think from an adult perspective, the BMI is, or that height and weight are getting measured all the time?
So they are not getting measured all the time. We know that. Height typically will be measured once and not repeated. Now, the weight might be repeated every time. Back to Tom's question, these are all in ambulatory care, and they should be doing that on a routine basis regularly. But, you know, when you get to the ED, you're not going to get a weight typically. When you get to the hospital, you may or may not get one, depending on your condition. So there are many reasons why you might not have that. And I, you know, back to your point about the banding, Adam's here from from Colorado, and we're sort of looking at what might be ways to model the data that you have at the large scale and figure out, okay, now I have census data, what would I expect that to be in that community based on this modeling? So, I think there's a lot to learn here that we don't really know enough about yet. Yes? Yes.
Yeah, I was going to suggest other data sources, like the DMV data set, where the people have their weight and height measured. And I think Oregon has something like that, so that might be an area of comparison.
That's good. I just got my license renewed. They didn't take my weight. They asked me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's self-reported. But if there's a place where they do that, that would be a great study. Yeah. Yes, Jim.
Since we have a room full of data geeks interested in this, I just wanted to make sure everyone knows that HHS actually has an obesity data challenge out right now. The deadline is the end of July. But this stuff and stuff New York City does, like all of these, I think would be really great opportunities and the kinds of things that we're looking for in our obesity data challenge. We're just asking people to make sure they use at least one open data set and mash it up with other data sets that you might have, and find all the information on challenge.
think it's time, right, Kathy? Okay, thank you.